Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to the Passion Pit Podcast. I'm Jay Michaels, and on this program, we discuss the movers and shakers and art makers of the indie theater and film scene. I'm thrilled because we have one of each today. My first guest is an independent director, producer, actress, and singer. The whole works. Currently, she's taking the cabaret world by storm. Here's the funny thing. She doesn't know she's going to be a guest on the show. Let's meet Mary Elizabeth McCary as she readies her latest musical review about a very daring subject, marijuana.
Fine, then you're on the air.
What? No! What are you doing?
Your turn! You are now the interviewee on Passion Pit Podcast.
Oh, but I've spoken on there. Is that okay?
I am sure you've spoken many times.
It's a conflict of interest?
I don't think it's a conflict of interest when you tell us why it is of interest in the first place. You have this amazing cabaret coming out, and that's going to be followed hard upon by a music video, if people still use the term music video, I'm very old, and a recording. I don't think people have CDs, so I have to say recording. Tell us all about I'm So High and Granny's Bloomers.
Okay, what do you want to know?
Well, let's start with I'm So High. You're going to be at Pangea, which is a gorgeous club downtown in April. So let's start right there. And your show is about one of my favorite topics, because I am, after all, a lover of herbs.
Mary Jane, yes.
There you go.
Yes. All right, so we're going to be at Pangea on April 6th, and we're going to be there from 9:30. Until about 11 o'clock. This is the first time we're doing this particular bunch of songs, so it's a little different than the stuff we've done before with Reverend Mary and Granny's Bloomers, although it's very much the same people. We have a little group that we work together very well. It's me and we have Dan Furman on piano, who's been working with us since the beginning, about 2.5-3 years ago on this project. And then there's Mario Claudio, who is both my voice student and my backup singer. Plus, in this case, he's going to be featured in a couple of songs. And then we have picked up a good friend named George Dixon along the way, who at first was a fan of ours and loved the music. But now he'd come into one of our open mics and sang some really hot blues stuff. And so we've asked him to sing. And he backup and as well as solo, some really good solo.
And they are both phenomenal singers. I've heard them sing, and they have these bafola voices, which is great.
Yeah, they're both very good singers, and great harmony singers as well. So
your Granny, your Reverend Mary, and her all man band make up Granny's Bloomers. So yes. So what's I'm So High about?
It's about marijuana. There are songs about marijuana. There are lots and lots and lots of songs out there about from the period of 1910 to about 1950-ish. That were about different things, different kinds of drugs that jazz and slash blues performers thought was great to write about because they were enjoying them. But marijuana had been used for centuries before and only became legal in about the late 1950s, illegal to purchase or have in any quantities. Different in different states, but generally speaking, that's what went on. And got much more vilified as time went on. And so people, there are songs in the 1960s, rock songs, folk songs about Mary Jane and all that. But this was a big bunch of songs that I when I first started researching stuff for Granny's Bloomers, I found a lot of, at first, it was a lot of dirty, hokum, vaudeville kind of sexy songs that we used. And it was a lot of double entendre and very interesting work. But in the meantime, I was also finding all these songs about marijuana, cannabis. So I've decided to curate now another show just about cannabis, and that's what this is about.
So it's pretty interesting that marijuana became illegal, and it's not because it was killing people, but because it was helping people, and it became this very public medicinal herb that was making so many other over-the-counter and prescription drugs sort of obsolete. So it's sort of they had to cordon it off so that medicine men can still make money.
Yeah, it could be. And also, that's definitely the case. This stuff was originally, and you'd get them in your pharmacy. You could get marijuana in your pharmacy. People grew it and people kept it in pharmacies. And if you had problems, say, with digestion or you were not eating, people who were like anorexic or because they were sick in different ways, they would give them cannabis. So I'm an herbalist, so I'm going to use the proper name just for now. And then we can call it other things if you want later. But cannabis was used for that, or insomnia or anxiety, or rheumatism, a lot of different things. So it was always found, just as was cocaine, at your drugstore, you know. So, yeah, I guess when it was somehow, they say, there was a gentleman called the T-Man. Tea being marijuana, you know, there's like a slang for the word marijuana, tea, so it was tea. The tea man would somehow got this marijuana from drugstores, and because he was connected to pharmacists. So pharmacists or people who gave people, you know, who purchased, the people they would buy from, pharmacies would buy from. So he was a musician himself.
So he'd buy a whole bunch and he'd bring them to his buddies.
At first, yeah, just for fun.
Excellent.
Because it was relaxing, and because, don't forget, like, we have prohibition. It's thrown into this idea where in the 1920s, there was no drinking. So it was hard to get liquor, and if you got liquor, it was totally illegal. You could be arrested for just for thinking about drinking. And people didn't want to be seen drunk, because if they were seen drunk, they could get arrested for that. So marijuana kind of took the place of alcohol during prohibition.
So these marijuana clubs, or tea rooms, as they were called, became all the rage. And that sort of makes sense that musicians or artists would do that, because there are stories of Toulouse-Lautrec and absinthe and things like that. So there's always something. And if you go into the 60s, please, let's not talk about Jimi Hendrix and his gang. There's always been that moment where you connect to your brain. And the funny thing is, you say you're an herbalist. So also, when you hear stories about Krishna Das and even his mentors, they all touched upon LSD to find this higher learning.
Well, Ram Dass is that's a good example of it. Ram Dass, if you know who he is, you know, Be Here Now, Ram Dass.
Yep.
He used LSD. He was a psychiatrist and had done experimentation with LSD and spread the news to other people. When they got to India, though, they realized the yogis there were in that state all the time. So there's that. They didn't need drugs to become enlightened.
Oh, my goodness, to be totally stoned all the time. Well, what are you going to do? But so now there's an interesting question, because we're talking about it being legal and not legal and everything like that. What would you tell our – now, I'm sure our listeners are listening to this, and a couple of them are going, oh, drugs can't go. Right. What do you tell them? What do you tell the ones that go, uh-oh, that's not good?
Well, we're not smoking it. Let's start there, right?
But you're extolling
marijuana.
Its virtues. You're extolling its virtues. What do you tell people that go, oh, drugs are the devil's lettuce and all those other great terms?
I think they should open their minds and do some research. I mean, we all have little computer devices in our hands now, everybody. So type in, you know, medical marijuana and see what the good it does for people, and then make a decision about it. You know,
that's very smart.
You know, why would people sing about it? They sang about it because it cured a lot of different illnesses. And a lot of these songs that are in this act are about, you know, I didn't used to do this stuff, but then my man left me, and so I'm so sad. But when I take my reefer, I feel better. I'm not sad. I don't want to kill myself anymore. I don't want to die. I'm poor, but it's fine.
I'm so glad you said that. People talk about how people jump out of windows and whatever when they're on drugs. No, marijuana stops you from that. That's where you rationalize and say, okay, this too shall pass, and I'll get on with life, and so everything's kosher.
Right.
That's
right.
Really cool. Now, we talked briefly when you said tea and Mary Jane. There are so many great slang words for marijuana. And right. I was roaring with laughter when I was reading the press releases. Jazz, jive, tea, hemp, Mary Jane, gauge, all of these amazing words. My favorite, there's one called Jay. So I was rather flattered.
Yeah, there you go.
Tell us some more of those. Do you have any that are your favorites?
Well, jive itself is interesting to me, because jive became jive talk. And jive is like, you know, so many songs. And the older songs from the 20s and early 30s, jive meant marijuana. It was jive. It wasn't the jive. And then eventually it became just a way to talk. Its own like kind of slang that Cab Calloway actually put together and made a dictionary of jive talk, so people could understand what the heck people were talking about. But I don't know for sure, but I'm going to assume that happened because people were smoking jive and then started having a good time making up words, because it does open up a whole part of your brain that opens up, you know, helps you to be more creative.
So
helps you to relax.
So it creates even stronger articulation as opposed to make you mumble like alcohol does. It's you actually are smarter from marijuana.
They say it helps you to focus. That's what a lot of people will say. It helps you to focus. And it also relaxes you, so you don't have the inhibitions, not like alcohol. Alcohol drops all inhibitions. You become like really a toddler, is how I see it.
Completely. completely. Right. It drops your defenses and your senses so that you're going to say and do something wrong.
Right. If you drink too many. Yeah. If you smoke too much marijuana or cannabis, you're going to get not drunk and throw up or crash a car, but you're going to have not a good time. Let's put it that way.
You're
going to be very frightened. It's going to take you to a place that's like you're not really in your body feeling. And it's not a good feeling. It's not healthy. It's not good for you.
But that goes with everything, though. You know, if you're an addictive personality, then potato chips are going to be your gateway drug.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. I know that one really well. That's right. Don't eat me any potato chips.
Yeah. Same here. My pusher gives me Oreos every once in a while. I get it.
That's a whole box at once. I get it.
There you go. While this is the inaugural high show, there have been granny shows that were the meat show. There were granny shows of all sorts of things. Granny's Bloomers, the group itself, has taken cabaret by storm. You have been in about a half a dozen cabarets. You've been in two different states doing it. Two different states doing it. Granny's Bloomers is out there, and it's become something very visible. Tell us about Granny's Bloomers.
Do you want to know why? What do you want to know about it?
Well, where did it begin? And tell us about the other shows. Tell us about when we go see a granny show. What are we seeing?
Well, when I first started it, I'd say 2013, I was told, somebody called me and asked me a club that catered to sexually kind of wild behavior. We're looking for a singer, and somebody had heard I sing jazz and blues, and they were looking for a singer that could sing dirty songs. I was like, what? What are you talking about? Jazz or blues, dirty blues songs? What? So I researched it. I didn't take that job. It didn't work out, but I researched it, and I found a shit ton. Am I allowed to say shit? I'm allowed to say shit. Songs called Hokum, Hokum, or Dirty Blues, or, you know, Low Down Dirty Blues with a Z. These were songs that were written by both men and women, or men for women, that were explicit sexual songs. But they were covered in double entendre, so it was never filthy. You never heard words for genitals or the sexual act itself of any sort. You just had funny inferences like, you know, hot dogs or sugar bowls or things like going down in the alley. You know, all these kinds of ideas, or the backdoor man, and these kinds of ideas just to make people, you know, everybody gets it when you sing about it, but you never say it, which is great. Like, I have a song called My Man Stands Out, which is about the way a man looks, how special he is. And if you're smart, you know what that means immediately. If you get it, you laugh, you know. So the same thing with these songs, too, by the way. All the jive is on right now. But if you don't know what that is, it just sounds like you're not talking jive talk. It can be hidden in the meaning of things in these songs. But
there's your double entendre. All the jive is gone. Okay, we're sad, but also means the jive inducer is gone.
Right. All the marijuana is gone. So I curated all these songs. I got all these songs together. There's thousands of them, literally. And I went through specifically just the ones written for and by women, because I'm a woman. And then I enlisted the help of Dan Furman, who I knew, who was playing piano for me in my vocal studio. And we got together and decided this would be great. You know, he plays jazz and blues himself. We started working on it, and then it just started growing from there. I added more people. We did different dates. We changed costumes based on the types of songs. We did three separate acts based on what kind of idea the songs were about. Like, the meat show is about male organs, and Down in the Alley is about more eclectic sort of kinky sex. And 1 Hour Mama is about satisfying mama. You know, so we did those that way.
That's great.
That's how, yeah.
That's great. And when you say the meat show, we're talking, you know, I certainly love my wiener when it's put in a bun and things like that.
Yes, that's right.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
That's great. Oh, so all these great allusions. And we're hearing this with the pot show also. Now, this is in the style of blues and jazz. So we're expecting to hear some very cool melodies and some very cool music going by for this show as well.
Right. Starts with old blues, goes all through the country blues. Some of it is country, old country blues. Some of it is what they call, you know, like more ragtime or, you know, barrel house blues. And then we have swing and rock, very early rock and roll as well. So
whether you love the herb or not, we're coming to hear some happy toe tapping stuff.
Absolutely. That's what people say. That's a funny word. People said toe tapping. It's toe tapping.
Of course. I remember tapping along to many a tune for the other granny shows.
Yeah, they're very exciting. You know, they're very upbeat and funny, and it's nothing sad. It's not sad blues. I mean, certainly people can sing that. We have done that in some open shows where we bring in both sad and happy blues.
Right,
but
right.
These are happy songs. This is stuff. A lot of it is during the 1930s, where during the Depression, they were writing these songs to have fun. They're dance songs. You can hear them in the back. We're talking about the Reefer Man.
I'm hearing that, yeah. So we're walking into just all of Granny's Bloomers, essentially. You're walking into a happy environment. You're walking in, and whether you got to smoke your troubles away or not, you are going to tap your troubles away.
Right.
For all of Granny's Bloomers, that this right. These are just wild nights from the good old days. And if I'm not mistaken, you put on wigs and baubles and beads, and there's top hats and straw hats, and so we're walking into a speakeasy at the height of its time when we see Granny's show.
Right, we try our best to keep our feet both in the era, which is a big era. We're talking about 40 years of different fashions, right?
Sure.
And then in today's world too. So you'll see on the stage people wearing stuff you'd see, you know, like sneakers, and then you'd see them wearing a straw hat and stuff like that. We try to make it a little bit of a little hint of the era, and so you can just sort of pretend you're there, you know, just for a little while.
That's very cool. You've been at the legendary Don't Tell Mamas twice. Is it twice?
Yes.
Okay. You've been at Don't Tell Mamas twice. You've been at the Duplex. You've been at Pianos, Otto's. You were in West Virginia for the Augusta Festival there. You have been everywhere with this, which is wonderful. But there's one place you're now going that puts it everywhere plus, and that's you're recording it. You are now beginning. Yeah. You're now beginning to put these down to history. Tell us about the Granny Project.
Well, there should be four albums if you include the cannabis shows. You know,
sure.
There may be more. But we want to at least do one album. We're going to try to find the best hits of our stuff and put them, like, you know, make a, I don't know, a 15, 16 something song album. So we want to start with one. And we have one called My Daddy Rocks Me, which is the leading one we think we might do now, which is one of a very old rock and roll song, and written by a
woman.
It's
the first time someone says rock and roll in a song. Is this correct? The first time it's been recorded?
The first time it was recorded. People called it rock and roll or rock and blues. It was really rock and blues first.
Right.
But the first time anybody said rock me or let's rock on recording was that song by Trixie Smith.
And there's even the line there, rock me with my daddy roll or something like that.
Right, my daddy rocks me with a steady roll.
There you go. So this is the first time we're hearing rock and roll from a song.
Right, it's a dance idea, but it's also a very sexual idea. So that's where that comes from.
This is something historic.
Yes, absolutely.
And this whole thing is really historic because some of these tunes have never been legitimately recorded, and some haven't even been legitimately music notated. They've just been sung in back rooms, and someone remembered them enough to sing them again.
Well, they were recorded because there were a lot of people, you know, at that time, people wanted to hear this music. You know, they would go out and they would buy these records. At first, it would have been cheap music, but this stuff wasn't really too notated. For us to do them, is we have to really study them to figure out what key they're in, what tempo they're in, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah.
And that's what you and Dan and everybody have done. You've listened to these very scratchy old recordings, some that you had to hunt down, and literally write the music out for these.
Yes. Yes.
Wow.
We're lucky to have Dan for, I have to say, give Dan his props because he's got perfect pitch. He can pick out notes. He just knows what key things are on in, and he's amazing. He figures it out in 5 seconds, which is such a blessing, really. So that has been helpful, very helpful. But
he looks stoned. He's just brilliant. That's all there is there.
He's very, very good musician. He's a really good musician. So, and he's a composer himself and has written his own shows. If people are interested in him, they can look him up. He's done a whole bunch of stuff. But the reason, you know, we want to record them also is because, not to say that the people who originally recorded them, was nothing wrong with it. It was gorgeous. Some of it is amazing. But we just want to make it more available to a modern audience by packaging it in a more modern way and getting it out there so people can have it and enjoy it and understand it.
But you are also taking something very important from it. You are not just saying, oh, look, here's the songs. You're going to let people know all about Trixie Smith and Bessie Smith and Lil Johnson and Mae West and all these amazing people who have sung these songs along the way. Sophie Tucker, who sung these tunes and have not gotten the proper credit as musicians of these tunes, as brilliant people. So aside from this, you're taking, and many of them are African-American, which is so necessary to hear. And you're taking these songs and you're saying, I got this song that was created by Little Johnson in this time. So these people are being able to now being committed to respectful memory, thanks to you.
Well, that's not just me. Thank you. But not just me. You know, there have been other people who've done this stuff. There's a woman who sang Midnight at the Oasis in the 1970s. This is her big hit. Her name is Maria Muldaur, and she has done a lot of these songs as well over time.
Oh, that's so cool. Because, oh, great.
You know, she was a folk / blues musician in the late 1960s, coming up with Bob Dylan and all those guys. And she started to record these as well. Some of them, not all of these songs, but some of these songs, yes. And there's been other groups that have been out there who've done this, like women's groups. And at least I can say, the women's songs are not as, I'm sorry, but the male songs are really sometimes very almost unbearable. They're so filthy that I don't think anybody wants to hear them. Like, they're so filthy. But the women's songs were always a little bit more palatable.
Yeah,
maybe more poetic. Let's put it that way.
Right.
But people have recorded them. They have, yes.
And so you're putting up a crowdfunding campaign. You're now talking about getting this done, where you're negotiating with recording studios and everything like that. You're starting that process. And on that note, you have a guest musician who you're in negotiation with to get onto this,
yes,
this recording. You want to tell us all about him?
Sure, my friend. His name is Jontavious Willis, and he is very young. Amazing guitarist and singer and blues artist from the South. And it's almost, people call him like, he's like reincarnated. He's a throwback to the originals. He can play and interpret blues the way people have not been able to do, in many people's opinions, in many generations. And they're saying he's the premier blues man of his generation. I think he's 23 or 24 years old, around that age. So he's very young, just graduating college, and he has his first album out and he's touring. And I've met him down in Augusta.
Right,
in West Virginia.
Yeah,
and we just sort of hit it off because I play the washboard in my shows for this show, and he just liked it. And we just started hanging out and talking about washboards and stuff like that, and we ended up singing together, and it just worked out really well. We blended really well. We meshed up really well. And so I had asked him if he wanted to come up to New York and record with us, and he said, I like what you guys are doing. I definitely want to do it. So he's involved. So
that is superior. There might even be a chance he's going to make an appearance at I'm So High in April. Yeah, he's in New York the day before or something like that,
right,
for another event.
Yeah, it's a New York folk festival in Brooklyn.
So, cool.
So that's on April 5th. If he's still in the city on April 6th for ours, he'll come by our show and just hang out and sit in. So
I think that's tremendous. Now you made a point. I want to touch upon something briefly. You made a point of saying you're an herbalist.
Yes.
Tell us about it. Give us the elevator story of being an herbalist.
Well, I'm an herbalist because I am a pagan / witch / Wiccan person, and I've been studying that art since I'm a child, pretty much. And that's part of my work is herbalism. I also do work with aromatherapy along that same line, and I do work with Reiki, and I do work with all kinds of meditation and massage and those kinds of things. But I also create magic and write about magic and talk about it and talk about witchcraft. And that whole world is a very important part of who I am, and that's why herbs are there. Herbs are there for medicine and for magic.
Now, you have taken that and you put it into your art. You have the PATH method, performing arts training holistically. So,
right.
So if a student came to you, aside from obviously being getting access to your brilliant career as a musician and a singer, they're also going to hear how they themselves can do things to basically pull the brilliance out of them from other methods. What happens with the PATH method? What's the new approach in the PATH method?
Well, I studied several things. I became quite ill at one point, and I had been doing, you know, paganism and Wicca stuff before that, but I got an autoimmune disease, which I was told there's really no cure for. And it's a very painful disease. And I started to study things like, you know, deeper study of herbalism. And then I studied Reiki. And then I studied something called music healing. And as I was doing that, I was teaching voice. And I started to incorporate those things, including all of the things I had learned as a younger person about meditation and mysticism and, you know, character development that comes from, you know, a more spiritual point of view in many cases, more less science and more spirit in art, in the theatrical arts, in musical arts and interpretation. So I started adding Reiki ideas and energy and movement ideas and sound healing ideas and talking about how singing and making sound within the body, you are an instrument. And by being an instrument making sound, you are actually healing and revitalizing all the cells in your body, including your brain. And every time you make sound, including right now, the sound of my voice is alchemy for somebody's body, mind, connection. They are hearing me and it does something to their cells in their body. So that's how I try to teach people that it's a sacred thing, that they are a channel for the divine that there is, and through them and their body, you know, their body cylinder that they live in, if you want to know what else to call it, the cylinder of their body.
Very sci-fi. I like that. The body cylinder. I like that a lot.
Exactly. So that through that cylinder, we'll call it that, they are bringing energy from the all, from nature, from whatever you believe in. I believe in a goddess, but not everybody does. But from your higher power, from your higher self, or whatever you call it, or aliens, if that's what you like. And you're bringing that into this body. You're transforming it into sound, and that sound is now out there and transforming other people's body and mind. So that's what I teach.
So right now, your whole career is focused on the gateway drugs that don't hurt you, but open your mind and give you the gateway to brilliant art and a better person within.
Right. There's nothing wrong. My opinion is there's nothing wrong with sexual ecstasy and exploration, and sex is a natural thing. So to sing about sex and to show people that it's just a lot of fun, and let's like relax about the whole uptightness of it and just enjoy it, because these people in the 1920s got us here doing that somehow. And also, you know, it's singing about medicine. We're singing about something that heals the mind and the body and the spirit. There's nothing wrong with any of that. And
that's
good
terrific.
To explore.
Yeah. That is terrific. All right. We're going to end with one more dispelling of a rumor. We started by dispelling what marijuana was and what it is and what it should be. And now you used a word there. And let's dispel that. You said you're a witch. Now,
yes.
How many of us are suddenly thinking Margaret Hamilton flying over MGM? So now, what's
a
witch?
Let me tell you.
Or at least one with that gas mileage. So what is really a witch?
Well, that's a word that's, you know, used to be, it's a long story, but I'll try to make it short. It's a word that comes from Old English called wiche or wicke. And it's about just people who bend energy. That's what the word was. And those were, and men and women were, could be wiche or wicke. And these people were able to,
is that
heal.
Where we get Wiccan? When we get,
yes.
When someone says they practice Wicca or they're Wiccan, it's the
yes.
same as being a wiche?
Yes, exactly.
Uh-huh.
That. Exactly that. It's an old English word, a very old English word. And that's where that comes from. And these were just wise women. Let's say, you know, I am a wise woman. I'm a root worker. I'm a, you know, a healer. I'm a person who can move energy in different ways, either, you know, through my voice, or maybe I can use herbs to make something happen that have energy, or maybe I can meditate on a color or a candle. And that's like, I always say witchcraft is no more than making a physical manifestation of a prayer. You're doing something that it's a prayer that you can see, that you can smell, that you can touch. We activate our child mind or our reptile brain with color and smell and pretty things. And that makes us open up to our desires and helps us to concentrate upon them and get them done. That's what that is. That's all it is.
And witches became criminalized because, again, this was a form of healing. This was a form of enlightenment that ended up stopping people from making money doing it the not necessarily best way.
Absolutely. This is absolutely the truth. That's where it starts and ends. And the same thing that happened to cannabis was, oh, we can't make money selling alcohol or whatever, so we're gonna get rid of the cannabis. Too many people like that better than my whiskey. So there's that. And too many male doctors wanted to be in charge and started to destroy the women who had bigger followings and knew this art since prehistoric times, so that they can do things like bloodletting and leeches instead and give people things like mercury and kill them.
I saw an episode of Outlander where one of the doctors back in the days of George Washington said all he needs is have tobacco blown up his ass.
Yeah. Yep.
I felt so much better. My father was a salesman, and he spoke in such vernacular. And he used to say, "Hey, I'm not blowing smoke up your ass." And well, I thought he didn't know where that came from. Now I realize he's doing historical references. Who knew?
Yep. And that's how they killed. Well, George Washington was killed that way. He was bled to death. So, you know, you can look that up. Yes.
I had no idea. There, I just learned something.
Yes, he was. He was bled to death with bloodletting. Because he had some kind of an issue, I forget what it was an infection, and they just tried to cure him, and they killed him.
He had a splinter from his wooden teeth.
And had he taken some herbs from some nice, white witch who
from
knew
some
better,
witch, yeah.
He would have had a better life.
And maybe if he had a joint or two, the war wouldn't have been so stressful to him.
Well, I tell you what, it was legal then, and I wouldn't doubt he did take it. He probably did take cannabis. They all did.
That is the slogan for your show. George Washington was a pothead. Perfect.
Maybe.
So basically, your whole life right now, you are showing that when someone criminalizes or demonizes or something like that, that isn't always the truth.
Right. No, of course not.
Now, if we took that on such a large scale and said, okay, we are taught to hate, we are taught to fear, we are taught to condemn, but is that really the course of action that we need to take?
Right. Of course.
Excellent.
We're in a very enlightened age because, again, I'm holding one in my hand talking to you. I have a computer in my hand. There's no reason not to understand all sides of all issues.
I remember reading Dick Tracy comics where he had a two-way wristwatch. And everybody looked at that as this amazing bit of the future. Well, here we are, right. Detective Tracy.
Yeah, that's true.
This is great. This is great. Thank you so much for being on this end of the Passion Pit podcast.
You're welcome. It's nice to talk about my stuff. Thank you for the time. I appreciate
it. My absolute pleasure. Your shows need to be seen by the world. Everybody needs to toe tap to these things, and everybody needs to hear just how high they can get just from listening to these songs.
Also, I want to add in about Pangea, if I may quickly.
Oh,
Pangea,
please.
Pangea, where we're performing, it's on, was it 2nd and 12th, between 11th and 12th in the East Village, right near NYU. And it's a really excellent place, and the person who runs it, Stephen, is very involved in trying to keep art in that area and keep that supper club full of interesting things, and that's why we're there. He thinks this is a great idea for his space. It's been painted by artists. The food is amazing, and it's comfortable and kind and good. People should go just to eat, if nothing else.
I was there only once. Gorgeous decor. He is an absolute doll, and he says yes to so much. He's such a nice man, and yes, the food is the food is much better than one might think. You know, just bar food is. It's a full dinner menu, and it's really exquisite. It's in a great section of the East Village. It's an excellent club. It must be something about the job because between him and Sidney Meier over at Don't Tell Mamas, these are two of the nicest guys in show business.
Absolutely. And so I just say, just throw in my thing, Pangea is Pangaea, which means the goddess of the earth. So there's that too.
I've just learned something else. I learned that George Washington was a pothead and bled to death. And now I learned that we're going to be in a goddess restaurant. Very nice.
Yes.
This was absolutely wonderful. We're going to do a whole thing. We're going to chat with Mario at some point. We're going to chat with George and Dan, the whole works. So this is going to be great.
Thank you
so much. Talk to you soon. Right. Like, I don't know, the next time I see you in the kitchen.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Would you like more people to attend your show? At Applaud, we combine artificial intelligence and human intuition to expand your audience and increase ticket sales. For a limited time, we'll help you fill your seats free of charge to prove our value. That's right, we will promote your show at no cost if you begin right away. Sound good? For more information, email promote@applaud.com.
Passion Pit, from now on, will have musical guests as well. We now have sponsors, and you've just heard from Applaud, one of the leaders in theater listings and reviews. Next week, we're going to hear from Tim Moss, who has a film opening as well as a guest appearance at Carnegie Hall. Well, of course, he's at Carnegie Hall. He's been everywhere else. Many exciting guests and musical guests will happen in the future. But for today, as long as we've been chatting with a definitive voice, let's go out listening to her sing from her first album, The Musements. Here's Mary Elizabeth McCarrie, Somewhere Over the Rainbow.
Lemon drops away upon the chimney.